It's Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Unlimited Life. It's so joyous and so exciting to be with you today. We've had so many wonderful things happening recently, and I'm just so excited to share them with you. We've got an incredible lineup of guests, and next week we're having Dr. Namira in talking about the lifespan and how to create life, and I'm so thrilled. And then we are talking with Katia in the following weeks, and she does therapy through tango. Imagine using tango dancing to be able to communicate, to be able to work with people through wars, through conflicts, through confrontations, whether they be Fortune 500 companies or relationships. So truly magical shows coming up. Today, I am so thrilled and so excited. We are talking with one of, I think, the most extraordinary coaches, not only in our nation, but in our world today. We are talking with Linda Salazar. And Linda is a hand analysis specialist from the palm of your hand. She can tell you what's happened in your past, in your future, in your relationships, and she can help coach you to the next steps and stages in your life and fulfilling your visions, your dreams, your desires, your life purpose. It's an amazing way to coach. Linda is in demand as a speaker, as an author, as a certified life and relationship coach, and she really specializes in helping people speak their truth with confidence and simple to complex issues, and really how to become the master of your own emotions so you can experience loving and authentic relationships in all areas of your life, both professionally and personally. She has a really unique approach to uncovering all of her clients' personal relationships and their communication styles. She helps open the doors to understand personal strengths and your personal weaknesses and how you communicate with others, and she offers practical advice and direction on how to maximize your strengths and how to approach all the areas of your life through growth and in a really head-on way that is nothing short of transformative. She actually came to my house and took my handprints, and then she did a hand analysis reading on me. And I can tell you, I was so blown away. First, she knew more about me than my mother, than my closest friends. It's amazing what she was able to reveal through the palm of my hand. And then the advice that she gave me was really life transformational, and I am so thrilled to share today with you my own journey as well as the journey that she can help you and the path that she can help you on. She is an author of Awaken the Genie Within. I love the title. And Parents in Love, How to Reclaim Intimacy After Your Child is Born. She is a contributing author to 101 Great Ways to Improve Your Life, and she's been featured in some of the world's leading personal excerpts, including Jack Canfield, you know, my dear friend Jack Canfield, Bob Proctor, Richard Carlson, and Alan Cohen. She's been featured on KCAL Channel 9 News in Los Angeles, as well as in Parent Magazine, Women Face, Spirit Magazine, and the Los Angeles Times. She has a deep knowledge of communication and a style that comes from years of experience using scientific hand analysis, and that gives her a unique perspective to revealing and solving life issues in a way you never imagine could be revealed. She is associate faculty teacher of the American Academy of Hand Analysis and a member of the International Coaching Federation. And so we are thrilled, we are ecstatic, we are overjoyed to have today, I think, one of the most special guests and certainly one of the most informative life coaches in our world today, Linda Salazar. Linda, welcome to the show. It's such a joy having you with us.
Thank you, Nicole. That was quite an introduction, and I am so grateful to be here. And I want to apologize because I told you I was going to call in a few minutes early, and my neighbor had an emergency, and I just got slammed, and then I pulled somebody else in so I could get back here, and I was just, So I'm taking a breath.
No problem at all.
Just a moment.
It's so funny because always exactly the way it's supposed to be. And we had Sydney Cressy on, and Sydney Cressy is – without a doubt, the top travel expert in the world today. If you want to take a private yacht for $50,000 a night with the butlers and the gloves and the exotic island, I mean, she's the person you want to call. And it took months to get her on the show, and we finally booked her, and she was on the show, and she called in from the America's Cup. And she was running in between speakers trying to get the sound, but I loved that they were doing the calling, the America's Cup in the background, that she was calling from the America's Cup because that's who she is. And the fact that you were helping people because that's who you are. So I think it's perfect that that would be the start of your day today and your time here. So I love that intro and energy. Of course.
Well, thank you. That was a beautiful reframe. That absolutely makes me feel better. Okay, I'm ready to go.
So it's so amazing. I mean, I have always been intrigued by hand analysis, and I think that we all are. Even in, you know, we look back at the circus and we look back at mystical times, and palm reading seems to be the thing that you would always see, you know, palm reading and you know your future or some soothsayer or something. And so there's always been a draw of, can the future and our life be told in the palm of our hand? And it can, right?
Well, not in the way people think, and not in the way that scientific hand analysis is. And it's something that I always want to express and make very clear and stress, that when I'm doing a hand analysis, I'm not doing any future predictions. I'm not telling people about how, if they're going to get married, how much money they're going to make, how many kids they're going to have. That is not what this particular process of hand analysis is about. And The only thing I can say in regard to the future is that because of the amount of information that is in the hands about one's personality traits, one's challenges, one's life lessons, life purpose, life school, which we'll get all into that in the next little bit here, but knowing this information about yourself at such a deep level as you found out yourself when I did this for you, it enables you then to kind of look forward and see where you may need to make the changes and what direction you can head yourself in, whether it's about personal aspects of your life or professional aspects of your life. But now you have greater information that ultimately you know at a deep level about yourself. Even when I'm sharing with someone their life purpose, when they hear it, it's not unfamiliar to them. They just didn't have words for it, and they may not be living it now, and that's often because the life lessons get in the way. And both the life purpose and the life lessons and this thing called the life school are all there for us prior to us being born. 5 months before we're born, our fingerprints contain our soul's agenda. And we come in with this contract that says, okay, this is what I'm here to work on in terms of my lessons, and this is what I'm here to master and move toward in terms of my purpose. And it's also important to explain to people that purpose isn't necessarily something you get paid to do. It's really a consciousness that you carry with yourself. And there are certainly people that I have read for, and their purpose was and is to be a mother on this earth and be and are absolute brilliant at what they do and love what they do and can't imagine doing anything else. And some people's purpose is literally to be in service and not necessarily getting paid for that service, and yet they have a job or a career that enables them to actually live out their purpose. And when they're living out their purpose, their heartfelt joy, that consciousness that brings them their greatest joy, then the job they're in isn't such drudgery because they know that this is a way to bring money in so that they can fulfill that purpose. And yes, there is absolutely the ability to have that purpose in your life where you do make money at it. So there's so many innuendos to this, and we don't just look at those fingerprints and say, okay, here's your purpose. Now I'm looking at everything else in the hands. I'm looking at the bends in the fingers. I'm looking at the lengths of the fingers. I'm looking at the shape of the palm. I'm looking at the various main lines, the heart line, the head line, the life line. I'm looking for any gift markings that show up. I'm looking for any challenge markings. I'm looking where lines are going vertical versus horizontal, because when the horizontal's in there, then that's saying to me energy is being cut off. And they're being stuck in certain areas depending on where it sits on the hand. So there's a story that's being unfolded. And the beautiful thing is that there is no bad news in the hand. There is just information, and then myself and the client get to have this dialogue, oftentimes just about a few main pieces in the hand. Usually it's three pieces, because to say everything that's in the hands is overwhelming and people can't take it in. So I look for these delicious dilemmas, if you will, where that's what we call it in hand analysis.
It's great. I love that. A delicious dilemma.
Isn't that lovely? I mean, it's a way to say, hey, you're stuck and here's the dilemma, and it's a delicious one. You know, you've got this kind of emotional style, and then you've got this thinking style over here, and they clash. Or you've got this emotional style, and you're in this kind of a job. This doesn't serve you. It doesn't match up with your emotional style. It doesn't match who you're with. It doesn't match who you are. And so when people get to see where that conflict resides within them and why it resides within them, there's this sense of relief. And there's a breathing point that shows up that was not able to be showing up before, because they didn't have any understanding, or they couldn't wrap their head around why this conflict or dilemma was there. And so when I get to introduce people to these various aspects of themselves, it then lightens some of the load. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful process.
It really is. Okay, so I have a question. One of the things I always love to ask people is I take them back to when they were little, 6, 7, 8. You know, for myself, I wanted to be Miss America. I wanted to be the Olympics. People want to be astronauts and firemen. And was the gift of, like, today, you racing out at the top of the show to help your neighbor, whatever, was that always your calling to help people? Was there this innate journey in you that was drawn to
that? There is no doubt, and it's certainly not something that I did in my career very early on, but it is absolutely, when I look back and I think about my friendships and how I was there, and then the role I even played with people when I got to college, I was the go-to person. You know, I was the person that people went to talk their problems through with, and it just has always been innately in me to want to serve in some way, shape, or form. I'm very drawn to humanitarian work in any way that I can, in any way that that shows up, and it's something also that has always been with me from very early on. So, you know, when I heard my life purpose and the life school I'm in, which is the School of Service, it made me cry, because it was like, how does this person know this about me? And I realized that, okay, now I get to really step it up now that I know this is what I'm here for. And it's almost like, you know, you grab that brass ring. It's like, yeah, I'm doing it. I've been doing it. Now I get to really do it, because it's who I am and I never have to question it.
That's beautiful. Now, you've used the term life school, couple times now. And it's like delicious dilemma.
We need to talk about that.
School?
Yeah, there are four life schools that show up in the fingerprints, depending on the type of fingerprint you have. So as a little lesson here on hand analysis, there are four main fingerprints. One is a loop, one is a concentric circle, perfect circle. The other is called a tented arch, and the other is called an arch, which kind of looks like sand dunes. And depending on the amount of particular fingerprints you have will determine what life school you're in. So in order to be in the life school of love, you need to have definitely eight, sometimes just seven loops in your fingerprints. If you're in the life school of service, then you need three or more whorls, the circles. If you're in the life school of peace, you need one or more arches. And if you're in the life school of wisdom, you need one or more tented arches. So again, it's peace, wisdom, love, and service of the four life schools. So what exactly is a life school? It's kind of like a backdrop that is constantly playing in your life movie consciousness. It's how you literally show up in the world with your behavior based on how you're viewing the world through your own filter system. And so wherever, regardless of where you are or what you're doing, your view is offering an exact calculated scenery to support your soul's progress. And by knowing your life school based on your fingerprint patterns, you move forward more easily and confidently and more joyfully in life. And the thing that happens is we come here to master this school. And by that, I'm talking about this thing called a Goldilocks rule, as Richard Unger refers to everything in the hands. And Richard Unger is the gentleman who is the mastermind behind this particular form of hand analysis reading. He's read over 70,000 hands, and he is the teacher of all teachers, and brilliant. If we didn't have Richard, I don't know what we would be doing. And the life school system, so that when we have the Goldilocks rule, there's this too much, too little, just right. Goldilocks sat on one chair, sat on another chair, and
yes,
got to her just right, right? Too hard, too soft, all of that. So in our schools, we can be too much in the school of service, or we can be too little in the school of service. And when we come into this lifetime, we are learning how to get to the just right place with our schools and other aspects of our hands, which I'll talk to as we go on. So, for instance, in the school of service, which is what I am, Nicole, remind me, do you remember what school you're in? Are you, you're in service. You have to be in service.
I'm in service, yes.
Yeah, okay. So when you're in too much, when you're being too much of the school of service, you're actually in servitude. You're giving of yourself, but you're giving of yourself in an unconscious way. And over time, it can be resentful and it can lead to burnout, and you're not really, you're doing it out of obligation more than you are out of a place of pure bliss and joy. You're giving of service when you're in the just right place, when you're doing what it is you want to do for yourself and others, but you're taking yourself into consideration what's going to make you happy in the process of doing this service. You are able to know how to say no when it's appropriate or when you don't have the time to give, and you don't put yourself last. Now, when you're too little of the school of service, it means that you're being incredibly leading a very, very selfish life, and you're not considering anything or anyone for any being. I find this with very young people that I read for. If they're in the school of service, they're just all about them, and they don't even know what it means to give yet. So they have to learn to go from one end of the pendulum to the other. And even when you're in the too much, I tell people who I've read for that are in the servitude place, now I want you to go to the other side of the pendulum. I want you to know what it's like to be very selfish. I want you to know what it's like to say no to people and to watch what happens when you're not there for everybody. And I want you to begin to choose what you choose to do and how you choose to give to others, in whatever way that may be, but it must be based on what's going to bring you great joy, so that it's just this automatic, inherently grateful thing you're doing for yourself along with another person. So we want to watch where people are at when discovering what school they're in, what emotional style they have, are they too much of it, are they too little of it, and then what do you need to do to get to the just right place? Because the key to living this beautiful life is living in a balanced place, living in a just right place, and not being so concerned if you're appealing to everybody else's needs, wants, desires, and demands.
I love that you're saying that, and the fact that they're at varying degrees. Because when somebody looks at their hand, let's take for instance, you know, I know that we've done imprints of my hands, and you say, well, is there a little Y, or is there an X, or how far does that go? And then there are opportunities that lie in your hand as well, correct?
Opportunities, in terms of, expand on that a little bit more.
Opportunities, as far as that you're saying, okay, so you're in the school of service, so you have an opportunity to help people, or you have an opportunity to help yourself, or you have an opportunity to fulfill your heart.
Yes,
those
absolutely.
Those opportunities are there for you to be able to unwrap, sort of like a magical gift, and say this is something that was gifted to you, and now through your coaching you're able to help people. fulfill that or reach
absolutely
those goals.
And you know what else, what came to my mind when you said opportunity is this thing called gift markings in the hand, because the gift markings give us the greatest opportunity to utilize what is inherently our particular gifts that we, you know, don't look at as gifts for ourselves. Because generally speaking, when we have a particular gift that is something that we do, you know, without thinking about it, it doesn't feel like a gift to us. It's kind of like, well, doesn't everybody think like that, or can everybody do that, or doesn't everybody have ideas that quickly? Doesn't everybody understand how to be with somebody in a time of crisis? And the fact is, no, not everybody does know all those things. So when we have, when I see these gift markings in people's hands, and particularly when there's somebody with multiple gift markings, that's leaving a great deal of opportunity for them. But the question is, what gift marking are you going to focus on, one or two, and if I've read for people who have 8, 9, 10 gift markings, and actually it paralyzes the person because they don't know, it's like which dog is going to lead the sled here of the pack. And usually there is one or two gift markings that will stand out. They'll jump out at me in the hand where others are there, but they're a little bit more buried underneath the various formations and lines that show up on the hand print. And when I see multiple gift markings, I will always look for the lead one or two and then speak to that before I'll even consider discussing the other gift markings. And I may never even bring up the other gift markings, depending on how they're resonating with the opportunity to step into using that gift marking. And I want to find out if they are. Because if they're not, what happens with gift markings is there's challenges that come with it. So what exactly does that mean? I'll give you an example with my own. I have what's called a gifted healer marking. It's another form of being able to help and listen and advise and just kind of teach people how to be there, know thyself, know themselves, and really step into their ability to solve what's going on for them in their life. And prior to really doing this, what comes up with it, because it sits right, the gift marking are just tiny little lines, vertical lines that sit underneath the pinky finger towards the inner side of the pinky. And they're on both my hands, and many people that I read for have them because of the kind of people I draw to me with the desire to be of service and to be either in the coaching world or just help in general. And when we're not using this, the penalty that comes with this is intimacy struggles with a partner, husband, wife, girlfriend, boyfriend, somebody you're living with, the people you're closest to in your life. But it's generally between a partner of some kind. And it can cause enormous pain and struggle when not using that gift marking. And oddly enough, it's exactly what I went through. I mean, I've been married now 32 years, and when I wasn't using this, there was this underlying frustration and lack of intimacy for me. And I'm not talking sexual intimacy. I'm talking about deep emotional intimacy. And when I learned about this gift marker and I was told about the challenge, it kind of opened up my whole world. And it was like, oh, my God, I have to use this. And when I started delving more deeply and consistently with my coaching work and certainly with the hand analysis work, everything shifted in my relationship. And it kind of blew my mind because I didn't do anything different but get involved with my gift marking. And each time I speak to people who have a gift marking, like, for instance, there's a gift marker with the headline, and it's called the HAL 9000, which Richard named after the computer on, what's that movie, 2001, Space Odyssey?
Yes, Space Odyssey, correct, yes.
Right.
Yes.
And the computer was named HAL because it's a brilliant mind, and it can solve large world problems. It's a supercomputer. And when it's under-challenged, which is the potential obstacle for it, that person with this gift marking will actually unconsciously create big problems in their personal life to fix. So it's very interesting what we do to ourselves when we're not utilizing aspects of ourselves that are here to be utilized, and how each of these gift markings, and I've seen every gift marking across the board with the various people I've read, and each one of them has expressed, when I share what the challenge is or the penalty when not using it, has expressed, yes, that's true for me. I have definitely felt that and experienced that. So it's
that's
good
incredible.
To know these things. Yeah.
It is. It's, you know, Linda, when you're talking about gift markings, the first thing that came to my mind was that the first gift that we really give our parents or our families are our little handprints. Like you come home from school with a little thing with your handprints on it. And that's really what we give people is the very first gift, is this is
so
the imprint of our hands and who we are, which is the imprint of ourselves.
Yes, and even with the feet, right, when you leave the hospital, they get an imprint of your feet. And some people, you know, read feet. I don't do that. Not interested, not going there. But it is fascinating that there are these pieces of information right here encoded on us. And, yeah, it, you know, I was, when you said that, I was thinking about a couple of weeks ago, I was walking my dog and just took a little walk over to the local grammar school. And on the wall there were all these handprints that the kids had done through the school year. And I was looking at them because now I see them with totally different eyes. And it was just fascinating to be able to look at these little handprints in different colored ink and think, oh, gosh, look at that heart line. And they're a big heart, and they're an emotion. They're a passionate heart. And, oh, look at that fingerprint. I mean, it was all of a sudden I knew the story of these people, even though I didn't know who they were. But it was fascinating. So, yeah, it's just, it's amazing.
Okay, so this brings me to two questions as you're talking. One is, I certainly want to know how you got into reading hands, because I think it's just such an incredible journey, and what a magical, magical path to unfold. And the other is, as you said, you were walking your dog. I have to ask, do dogs and cats have little prints too? Do paw prints?
I have no idea. I mean, they have them, because I've certainly seen, you know, when there's mud on my dog's foot and it's gone on a piece of paper or something, there's a print there. But I don't know what any of it means. I just know that my dog is perfect, and it doesn't really matter.
Right, okay, mine are too.
Yes, see, there you go. What else would a good mother say?
But I had to ask. So I never thought about that before, but I was like, oh,
I don't know.
They have little prints.
I don't know. There's probably an animal whisperer out there somewhere that would say absolutely.
It would be good to find out.
Yeah,
and
that'd
then
be fun.
My question is then, of course, that how did this unfold in front of you? Because, I mean, you came to my house and did these prints on my hand, and then you sent me the prints. And I do want to talk about how people can do that and send you prints and how you can read their hands. But honestly, Linda, I mean, what you knew about me and my heart and my spirit and my soul and the depth of my desires, I was so blown away by the enormity of the information that you were able, you know, to ascertain just from my hands. And so how did this journey even begin for you?
Well, I was kind of going through a dark night of the soul, and I was frustrated with the business and not being able, with the coaching, in terms of just felt like there's got to be something that can help me help these people more quickly and in a deeper way and understand them without them having to tell their story over and over and over again and me having to do guesswork. And then I was also kind of going through some stuff in my marriage, and I was frustrated there. And I literally just had somebody, a friend that I was talking to, and I was just so beside myself. I said, I don't even know where to turn anymore. This isn't about just talking to somebody and working my way through it. I said, I need something. I need concrete information. And she said, you know, there's this thing called hand analysis. Maybe you want to try it. And I looked at her with three eyes, and she had three eyes, and I said, let me get this straight. You want me, one of the most logical human beings you know, to go have a palm reader read my hand and tell me what's going on in my life? That's the craziest thing I've ever heard. She said, no, I didn't say palm reading. I said hand analysis, and it's quite fascinating. I said, have you done this? She said, no. And I said, well, then how do you know it's fascinating? She said, because I've talked to people who have done it, and everybody comes away just mind-blowing experience. And she said, what have you got to lose? And I said, okay, what the heck? She was right. What have I got to lose? So I did a little search online, and I found a woman that I used to coach with. In other words, she was my coach, mentor for a little while, and she had just been trained in hand analysis. And I thought, well, isn't that interesting? And then I thought, but she just got trained. I want somebody more seasoned. So I found out her teacher and reader was, and I went to that person. And literally within 2 weeks, 3 weeks perhaps, we were on the phone, and she was doing my reading. Now, how does that happen on the phone? Well, what happens is you have an ink kit sent to you, and you are given instructions on a piece of paper that says how you make your prints, and you put your prints on a piece of paper that are all inked up, and there, voila, as you saw, Nicole, are your hands. And then I just put them back in the self-addressed stamped envelope she sent, and she pulls them out. She does whatever she did at the time, and we got on the phone, and that reading turned my life around completely. I mean, literally in 3 minutes, I was in tears because she was nailing me and getting to things that I could not express that made absolute sense. And within 2 weeks, I was in a class learning hand analysis and then went through all four levels and then went to my teacher certification so that I can now teach others how to do this. And here I sit. So it happened very quickly when I got into it. And I will say at the beginning, it was an exorbitant amount of struggle because the fingerprints were just like looking at Chinese to me. And I got very frustrated that I didn't get it right away. But, you know, 5 weeks later, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, I got the glasses on now, I get it. So that's really how it happened. It was just going through my own moment in time where it's like, wow, I don't know what else I'm going to do here. And then what happened is that it literally did cut my time in half, if not more, my detective work in half when dealing with new coaching clients. Now the deal is I don't take on a client unless they have a hand analysis from me. So if somebody doesn't want to do that, then I won't work with them. And the hand analysis when I'm doing long-term coaching with somebody is included in the work. But if they say, oh, no, I don't want to do that, well, then I'm not going to do this because I can find out all the information I need to get us going at lightning speed, and then you won't have to spend as much time coaching with me because I can get to your purpose in your life, lesson in your life, school and your challenges and any gift markings you have, and I'll understand your emotional style and I'll understand how you think, and on I went. And so that just, you know, things are meant to be, and it was just the perfect timing and the perfect solution, and it's just been gangbusters ever since.
That's wonderful. And you work with people all over the world. I mean, you have Skype clients, and people can, yes. You send them a kit, and they can send in their handprints to you, and you even have parties, which I love. I want to have a hand analysis party. And
wouldn't that be
fun?
Tell
me all the ways that people can work with you.
Well, those are them. I mean, the furthest client I had doing hand analysis for was Malaysia, and we did it where I just sent her the ink kit, and she sent it back to me, and then we ended up doing a Skype call. So I would just give her the information and talk to her and do some coaching, and then we ended up doing some coaching beyond that. But it doesn't matter where anybody is. It literally, now for the hand parties, that's a different story. Those are all local in terms of just going and doing, like if you're going to do a bridal shower, if you get something fun like that, I can go and do 5-10 minute readings for people, and it's a group reading, so everybody's sitting there and listening, and if they want privacy, then we can go off and do it privately. But normally it's, you know, there's nothing that I'm telling people that anybody couldn't hear, and it's just fun, and it kind of blows people away to hear things about their friends that they know to be true, that their friend who's getting the reading doesn't see themselves as that, which I always find fascinating. They're like, no, that's not true. And then the people sitting in the room are going, it's absolutely true. What are you talking about? She's dead on. So we get a good laugh because so often we don't see ourselves the way other people see us.
That's just remarkable. I love that. And I love that you do parties. I think that that's so much fun, and it's so enticing. And what a great way to sit down. And you, I know that you talk about the love line a lot.
Yes, yeah, the heart
line. And that's something people, everybody wants to know about their love line. Can you talk a little bit about the love line?
Yes, and people can even look at theirs. This is the one line on the hand that I can pretty much let people look at their own hands, even on the phone, and they can get a sense. Sometimes it feels a little confusing if they don't have a perfectly straight on, not in terms of the straightness of it, but just straight on in terms of what I'm talking about, because there can be little deviations to the four different heart lines. But there are four main heart lines, and they are the big heart, the romantic idealist, the hermit, and the passionate heart. Now, before anything else gets said there, the heart line on the hand is the main line that sits at the top of the palm. It starts underneath your pinky, and it will travel across the hand, ending anywhere from the middle finger over to the index finger. If you're looking at your hands now, if you cup your hands, you know, bring your fingers forward just a little bit, it'll increase the crease of that line so you can see where it actually ends. And sometimes there's little pieces that kind of jut off at the end, and that has meaning to it, but not something that people are going to learn easily right here and now. But here's how the four look.
And Linda, before you go on, is it the right hand or the left hand, or doesn't it matter?
Doesn't matter, because you want to look at both your hands, actually. And if you don't have a headset on or you're not on the computer, you'll have to kind of go between the phone and your hand to the other hand. But both hands can have either the same heart line or they can have different heart lines. And the right hand is our outer world hand. That's the hand we shake with, right? So when we are looking at that heart line on the right hand, it will represent how we emotionally share or show ourselves to the world. When we look at the heart line on our left hand, this is our inner world. And this is how we're going to be in our most intimate moments, certainly in our privacy of our home and perhaps even with the people we're closest to in our home. Occasionally, there are exceptions to this rule. I'm a lefty, but I found that my right hand is still my outer world. Sometimes the left hand can represent, if you're a lefty, the outside world. But I don't find that very often. So you can kind of go with the 95% rule that your left heart line is going to be how you keep your emotional style in your privacy of your home, and the right hand is going to be your emotional style out there in the world for the world to see. So let's start with the big heart, because just that name alone pretty much sums up what it is. And the big heart is a gentle curve that makes its way up to the index finger, ending underneath the index finger. Sometimes what you'll see is this curvy heart line that kind of looks like in between the middle finger and the index finger. And if it's got a strong enough trajectory curve to it, it's actually the passionate. So we're just going to take this as a gentle curved line that ends underneath your index finger. And it has to get to your index finger in order for it to be the big heart. The big heart is someone, and let me say this prior to explaining each one individually. We all have components of each of these heart lines. So if you hear me explaining what they each look like and feel like and are, their descriptions, know that there's going to be parts of them that you relate to. But innately, we have a main heart line or two that we most relate to, and this also falls into the category of, are you too much or too little of your emotional style? If I go back and forth between the word heart line or heart type or emotional style, it all means the same thing. And the heart line does represent how you want to be loved and how you want to show your love, how you do show your love. And this is where, in relationships, when we're with certain people who do not have the same emotional style or heart line as us, conflicts can arise when we don't understand that about each other, which is why I use this so intently in my relationship work with people. So back to this big heart. The big heart is somebody who is just that. They are, bring yourself over here and put your head on my shoulder and let me speak to you and you speak to me and I'm going to solve your problems. And if you're going back in the good old days, Mrs. C from Happy Days had a big heart. She would be a representation of that. And
great.
They need connection. That's their modus operandi. They are mandatory for connection. If you're at a party with a big heart, or they're throwing the party, and you happen to be a hermit, which I'll explain momentarily, and you've had enough of the party, and you see your friend who's the big heart over there with four other people, and they're talking to those people, you'll sneak out, and you'll think to yourself, oh, I'll just catch up with her tomorrow. What will happen the next day, most likely, is the big heart will go, hey, what happened to you? Oh, I left early. I know you left, but why didn't you come over and say goodbye to me and give me a hug? Because you were talking to four people. It doesn't matter. I want that hug. Say goodbye to me. That's the big heart. But the hermit's like, okay, that doesn't even make sense to me. So the big heart needs connection. And when you're being the too much, too little, this is what it looks like. If you're too much of the big heart, you don't know how to say no. You're saying yes to everybody. You're doing for everybody. You're there for everybody. And you're getting burned out. And ultimately what ends up happening is resentment can happen. And it can have you swinging to the other side of the pendulum, where you end up being too little of the big heart. Now, this is where you literally bury your head in the heart in the sand. Don't bother me. Leave me alone. I don't want to do anything for anyone. And that's not the big heart's nature. But once they're through that, they'll come back out, and they'll swing right back to the too much. So this is where I'm often teaching people how we want to balance this. Know what your boundaries are. Know when to say no. Teach people that it's not going to be a yes every time they come to you that they're so used to with the big heart, because the big heart can feel like they're being taken advantage of, and the only reason that's happening is because they're not understanding how to create their own boundaries and how to say no, and teach people what the rules are in terms of the relationship dynamic. So that's the big heart. Any questions around that? From you,
that's
for our audience.
Interesting. No, my gosh, that's amazing. And especially, I love the fact that you're saying, you know, for somebody saying, why didn't you say goodbye to me, or why didn't you? Because we don't realize where other people live sometimes.
Exactly.
And
beautifully
other people's
said.
Concepts and perceptions and somebody else's needs and awareness. It's often, you know, mind-boggling and dumbfounding. And so I love the fact that you're able to differentiate the different styles of loving and need and heart.
Yeah, it's beautiful when I'm working with somebody, usually because most of my work is with women, and they're coming to me for relationship issues, especially if they're married. I immediately ask them to find out what their husband's heart line is so that I can understand. I'll give them an understanding, and I'll send them pictures so they can compare it, and then they know, and we can talk about what he needs versus what she needs and how the process can, now the dance can begin to shift so that you're following each other's innate needs and lead, and then people understand each other at such a deep level. And I'll share a story with you in a little bit, but I want to get through all the heart lines so everybody listening can look at their heart line and say, well, what about me? This is me. So now...
My line doesn't go that far to my index finger, right?
So now we've got, let's go to the hermit. The hermit is a shorter heart line. It's straight. It starts underneath the pinky finger at the top of the palm, remember? And it travels and ends underneath the middle finger. It can end before the middle finger, which I've only seen once, which is super, super hermit. It can even have a gentle curve to it, but it won't get up to the middle finger and it won't get up to the index finger. So it's the shortest heart line there is. And the hermit type, they have a difficult time sharing their feelings. They really do keep their feelings close to their chest. And when they are in conversation or a difficult conversation with someone and they're not clear on what they're feeling, they won't be able to just talk it through. Like a big heart will talk it through. Let's work this out. Come on, let's just keep talking through this. The hermit needs time to marinate his or her feelings. The hermit needs the ability to go off, really think about what's going on inside, and then come back and have the words put together in a way that they feel they're going to make sense. And sometimes that can take days, a week. If they're doing too much of the hermit, it can take a month. So it's that balance. Like, try to get a sense of what you're feeling and then take the leap to say some of what you're feeling, even if you're not 100% sure. The work is a non-negotiable for the hermit. And this is really something when you've got a big heart living with a hermit and in a marriage, oof, it can be really tough in the relationship when they don't understand this about each other, because the hermit person needs an enormous amount of sanctuary. The hermit person shows their love by the things that they do versus their verbal appreciation or verbal I love you or you're so beautiful or you look so beautiful today or I so appreciate. They don't do it that way. They do it by the things that they do for people in terms of showing their love. And when you've got a big heart who's all about the verbal expression, it appears to the big heart that just because the hermit's, you know, doing lovely things like cleaning the dishes or putting air in the tire or putting gas in the tank of their wife or cleaning the home, they're not looking at that as the way the hermit is showing their love. And so that's where conflict can come in. Now, the hermit also needs a great deal of sanctuary time. So, as I said, that work is non-negotiable. So they may go to work all day, and then they need to come home, and they may need to go off and be in their office to be completely alone, especially if they've been with people all day, and decompress. Now, all of us at some point need to decompress and have sanctuary time, but I'm talking the hermit can go into their cave, get so immersed in what they're doing, and not even give anybody else a consideration and need to be out there. So for the too much or too little, the too much hermit is when they go into that cave and they do not pay attention to the fact that there are other people out there. So the hermit has to know when enough is enough. And then go out there, join the party, be part of your family, and participate. If they need to be in their sanctuary or cave for very specific reasons, then it's important that they put a note on the door that says, do not interrupt under any circumstance other than an absolute emergency. Somebody's bleeding, somebody needs to go to the hospital. And then people will know to leave them alone. They're also slow to change. Hermit is related to the earth. They're very reliable and predictable and loyal. And they can be amazing in an emergency. You know, they can be the one who, in the time of crisis, will get everything together, make sure everybody's okay, and then go off and cry in their pillow because they don't cry easily in public settings. So that's the overall view of the hermit. Now, if they're being too much of the hermit, they're actually not getting enough, too little of the hermit, they're not getting enough sanctuary time. They're not taking care of their needs, and they're also expressing themselves more than they really want to out of obligation or feeling forced to do it. So they need to find that balance and get to that middle ground. We can think of a hermit as a John Wayne type or Jodie Foster when she was in the movie Contact, or Clint Eastwood in Bridges of Madison County. So that's the hermit. Anything you want to add?
Great
or question
examples.
About that?
Those are amazing examples. I love that, to leave a note, please do not disturb me unless somebody's bleeding or dying. I thought you were going to say, like, please do not disturb me, genius at work. You know, or...
No.
Creation and process. Or...
No. This is like, let me lay it out clearly here. If you're not dying, leave me alone.
And it's amazing when you say, you know, people that do things, and that it's in that doing that they want to be loved. And I certainly verbally express my love as well as do things, you know, so I guess I do both. But I remember I had a friend of mine say to me once, you and I love completely differently. Mm. And I was so shocked by that statement. I had no idea what she was talking about. And she said, no, it's true. She said, you do this and you do that, you do the other things, and because you do all these wonderful things for people, you want people to love them, you know, to love you. And she said, and I want people to love me in spite of what I say and do. She said, I will hurt your feelings. I will put my foot in my mouth. I will embarrass you at the very worst times in your life. And despite what I do, I still want you to love me.
And she sounds a passionate type. And the other part you were talking about is the romantic idealist. And those are the two we have left to discuss. So that's perfect. A perfect segue, Nicole.
Great.
Well done. So that the I'm leaving the passionate for last because it's one that I have found in so many women that I read for, but they're always playing the role of the big heart, which is kind of how we are taught growing up as little girls, you know, be kind to everybody and be there for people and help people and blah, blah, blah. Don't be what the passionate describes, but we'll get to that momentarily. So the romantic idealist, this heart line goes from the pinky all the way over to the index finger, but it's a straight line. Remember, the big heart curves up to the index finger. The romantic idealist is straight and goes over to the index finger. The romantic idealist are people who are thoughtful and considerate, and they feel a lot, but they don't necessarily display what they are feeling. So it might appear as though it's the hermit, but the hermit isn't even clear about their feelings. And the romantic idealist knows those feelings, and they feel so deeply, but it's not easy for them to put it out there. So keep in mind that anything in the hand that is straight is more analytical, and anything in the hand that has curviness to it is more emotional and more out there with their emotions, which is why people with the big heart and the curve are out there with the emotions, and people with the romantic idealist and the hermit, which are straight, are more in the analytical, keeping them more up in their head and not able to express and expose their emotions as easily outwardly. The romantic idealist is going to think about how they feel, because they do not.
Oh, you sounds like a rap song.
Well, maybe we could come up with a rap song for all of these heart lines. That would be kind of cool. Then I'll make a video. I'm going to have to consider this. And I'll give you credit for the idea.
They think, feel, how they feel.
And that's because they do not want to hurt anybody's feelings. That's like the worst thing they could do. And they will, if they want to write you a thank you note, if anybody does that anymore, on a piece of paper with a pen, it might take an hour. Okay, well, there you go. It might take an hour to get that thank you note written because they want it to be the perfect thank you note. They want to make sure there's nothing in there that's forgotten or left out or doesn't say something that could actually be misinterpreted to hurt somebody's feelings. So it can drive certain heart styles, the one we're going to get to next, out of their mind because they're complete opposite of each other, that being the passionate versus the romantic idealist. A person that you might think of as a romantic idealist would be Meg Ryan, Sleepless in Seattle, and even Shelley Long. Now, I'm dating myself, so for those who aren't as old as I am, Shelley Long in Cheers, who played the Diane at the bar. Romantic idealists, they require meaning in their life. They love and deep, meaningful conversations. They hate conflict, and they will avoid it at all costs. Their modus operandum is over-processing, that thinking. And really, the best part about them is how considerate they are. But when they are too much versus too little is what it looks like. The too much of the romantic idealist will constantly edit their feelings, and they don't have any consideration or request for themselves, and they want to keep peace at all costs. So if they are standing in a group of people and everybody's deciding what to do, maybe there's four or five friends, and everybody's kind of got an opinion, and then they look at you and they say, hey, Nicole, what do you want to do? You, as a romantic idealist, might say, I don't know, it doesn't really matter, whatever you guys want to do, even if you actually do have an opinion. But you don't want to cause waves. A romantic idealist will do whatever needs to be done to keep people happy. And I have a cousin who is heavily too much of the romantic idealist. And it doesn't matter how much we talk about this and what she comes to me for during frustration moments, I just look at her and I say, you're too much of this. You gotta stop this nonsense. But she can't. She just can't find it in herself to do it because she doesn't want to hurt anybody's feelings. She's got too much fear around it, and that's where the person is being way too much romantic idealist, and it's not a very, very comfortable place to live because that means that you are truly ignoring your own needs and desires and wants, and we all are deserving of that. Now, when you're too little of it, it's quite interesting what happens because then you can become very defensive and you can create all sorts of drama and get caught up in other people's drama stories and all that considerateness goes out the window and you're just spewing whatever is coming out of your mouth and there is no peace. So, you know, when I say to people, you're too much, we want to swing you over to the pendulum for the other side, I balance that too little because I don't want to see people getting super. Go ahead, Nicole.
That's incredible. And I know that we only have a couple minutes, and I want to make sure we get the last one. And I also want to make sure that we have a way to contact you.
Oh, okay.
So before
goodness.
We do the last one, can you just give me your site and your phone number and the best way for people to work with you? Because I love this information. It's just absolutely remarkable.
The site is yourheartisinyourhands.com. Hands has an S on it. Yourheartisinyourhands.com. You can contact me that way or through my contact form. My email is linda@yourheartisinyourhands.com. And phone number is 310-375-4800. 310-375-4800. Okay.
That's great.
So now you'll also
be with us tomorrow on Hourglass Ride. And you know, so if people want to be listening in tomorrow, that's 1:30 Pacific time on Hourglass Bride. And please, you know, if you feel free to call in, we always love your calls and be able to help you get through the next process of whatever it is that you're trying to unfold and launch in your life. And you can also get a copy of today's show simply by sending a text message to 55678. 55678, really simple. And the message is Nicole. And this entire show can be downloaded right into your phone or any mobile device. So that is our gift to you. So we're so glad that you're listening today. And go ahead, tell us the last one.
All right, well, whip through the passion. So the passion, it is a heartline where it curves up to the middle finger. And sometimes it will start making its way over to the index finger because it wants to be in the big heart world. But if you've got a pretty strong curve going up to the middle finger or in between the middle finger and the index finger, you're a passionate. Passionates can be intense and volatile, and they can have strong reactions. That's what Nicole was talking with her friend. They're not concerned about how somebody's going to react to them. Or they're going to take care of themselves first, take care of their needs first, and they expect others to do the same because the passionate always knows his or her wants. You can think of a passionate person like Julia Roberts in Erin Brockovich, or Madonna is passionate, especially in her Truth or Dare movie. They require passion. They like excitement. They do not like to be bored, and they're going to go after their wants. That's their modus operandi. And their best trait, quite honestly, is enthusiasm. They are wonderful at a party, to be the life of the party. And so we have to balance this. If we're too much of a passionate, well, then we really don't care about anybody else's feelings, and it is all about me, me, me. And we want to learn to kind of go to the other side of the pendulum so that you learn how to show consideration and you act more like a big heart, actually. That is when what I find with most women is that they go from not accepting the role of the passionate and they end up playing the role of the big heart because, let's face it, the big heart is certainly more accepted than being selfish or knowing your needs and asking for what you want. So the bottom line with the passion is getting to the just right place where you are showing your consideration for other people's needs, but you're still willing to be passionate and you're still willing to take care of what you need and ask for what you want. And the passionate and the romantic idealist are complete opposite of each other's. So when you put two people like that together, it can be very much of a struggle. So hopefully I got this in time.
Oh, absolutely. Perfectly timed. So Linda, thank you for being with us today. Such an incredible gift to have you here. I love your information. I know what an incredible coach you are. Just even the time that you took with me to go through my hand and what's happening in my own world, my own journey, my own life, a way to launch that, to set that into freedom, into flight. And I know that working with you on any level is such a grand gift. And we are thrilled that you're going to be with us tomorrow on Hourglass Bride. So please stay tuned and join us there. And we look forward to having you back here and hearing people's results on what's happening and how this has really transformed their lives. And I know that it has. And I know that this work does. And you're just so wise and so knowledgeable and so caring. And you're a remarkable coach. And as far as hand analysis, I don't know anybody better. So thank you for sharing the tools and the techniques and the secrets to the secrets in our hand and for being with us today.
Oh, Nicole, thank you so very much. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I love you dearly, and I look forward to being on with you again tomorrow. And thank you, everybody, for listening. I hope you got to learn something about your emotional style.
Absolutely. Linda Salazar, thank you for being with us today. What an incredible guest. Just a remarkable show. So find her, get your hand done. I did mine, and I'm telling you, it's just incredible. It's breathtaking. It's wondrous. It's magical. And it's a science. And it actually reveals things in your own life that you never knew was possible. And through that, it really gives you opportunity to take the next steps and to really step into your life purpose and your divine purpose in a whole new way, which is just incredible. Next week, we have Dr. Mimi, who I've been just so thrilled that she's coming on. She's just an amazing doctor, talking about the journey and the path of life. And then, of course, we're talking about tango and movement the following week, how therapy through emotion and through emotion and through actually being able to take one step and another step can change your life. So fascinating, fascinating, fascinating information. And again, to get a copy of today's show, simply send a text to 55678. The message is Nicole. I want to thank Linda Salazar for being with us today. This is Nicole Brandon wishing you an unlimited life, and may all your magic and visions and wishes and dreams come true. We will see you next week.